From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, those open lines. But here's what's happening. Well, he's back. In an audio tape aired on Al Jazeera television, Al-Qaeda chief Osama bin Laden is warning French President Sarkozy that his refusal to withdraw troops from Afghanistan was a green light to kill French hostages. A couple of them are being held. In a message specifically targeting France, Al-Qaeda chief Osama bin Laden warned that Paris would pay a high price for its policies and that the fate of these French hostages would depend on the pullout of French troops from Muslim lands. Douglas Hagman, who monitors these websites for us, on the line. Douglas, he's back.
Well, or so it seems, George. Indeed, there was a two-part message released today on Al Jazeera, essentially warning France, number one, if you don't pull out of Afghanistan, we will kill your hostages, which there's six altogether, five kidnapped French nationals and one French intelligence asset. And the second part is we have the right to launch attacks against France, period. And looking at this, the timing of this message, the way this was displayed, presented in terms of its audio rather than video, again, we see nothing in terms of any proof of life, anything contemporaneous, and I don't see this audio message as having any independent authentication as being from Osama bin Laden.
You think he's dead, don't you?
I do. And, George, I've never said this anywhere, and let alone on national radio, but having worked in the corporate sector as an investigator for Fortune 500 and 100 companies, I've been privy to the inner sanctums of some of the best intelligence operations in the world within these private corporations. They boast about having their own spy assets inserted into the majority of Western governments, including but not limited to the United States. They're actively advancing a shadow corporate global governance for ultimate power and policy control. So in other words, it's the power brokers, the global elite that are running things, and part of their tactics is to use these types of psyops for protracted warfare and setting agendas that just amount to contrived messages like this.
All right, interesting take. Thanks, Douglas. MSNBC's most successful and controversial personality, Keith Olbermann, for his outspoken liberal primetime programs, gave an abrupt goodbye to viewers and said Friday this was his last show. It was not immediately known if he quit or was fired. Olbermann did not address that situation, and MSNBC said only that they and Olbermann had ended their contract. Nearly two-thirds of drivers could have more corn-based ethanol in their fuel tanks under an Environmental Protection Agency plan. The agency said that 15% ethanol blended with gasoline is safe for cars and light-duty trucks manufactured between 2001 and 2006, expanding an October decision that the higher blend is safe for cars built since 2007. The maximum gasoline blend has been 10%. Ethanol to date. David Bloom, executive director of the International Institute for Ecological Agriculture and the author of Alcohol Can Be a Gas, on the line with us now. David, are you happy with this, or do you think we should have more ethanol in gasoline?
Well, I have mixed feelings about this, George. It's 2 years too late, and every delay we have of shifting from fossil fuels to ethanol is a step in the process where we end up with awful fuels that we don't want to have. And, you know, as many Coast listeners have found out, running up to 50% alcohol is perfectly safe in any fuel-injected car. Many states have broken with the EPA and are now selling alcohol in blender pumps, which allows the consumer to choose just how much alcohol to put in the tank. It mixes up to 50% alcohol with gasoline at the pump. And, you know, the fact that Brazil has been running 95% of its cars on alcohol for the last 20-odd years is more than enough proof that cars today and in the past are able to run on high-percentage blends of alcohol. You know, it's great that the EPA is stepping up and fighting the American Petroleum Institute's lawsuit, which is trying to prevent the increase of alcohol on the state level. But We need to go much further. If we want to be free of foreign oil, we need to get up to 30 to 50% alcohol or do without oil altogether and run on E100 as Brazil does.
Baby steps, David.
You know, George, it's way past time for that.
Yeah.
We're talking about real crises in the next few years as prices top $200 a barrel. Jim Rogers today in the BBC was predicting that. President of Shell Oil a couple of weeks ago was predicting it. Pretty much everybody's on track for $4 a gallon this year and maybe $5 by 2012. I don't think people and economies can sustain the monopoly control of our energy by oil companies, and we need to return that back to people in our communities who can make alcohol and provide it to each other, and do that with local crops, not just corn.
David's website, Alcohol Can Be a Gas. In the Ukraine, Jenna is a 14-year-old crocodile. Jenna's in an aquarium, has been refusing food and acting listless after eating a cell phone dropped by a woman as she tried to photograph him. Aquarium workers initially didn't believe the woman's story, a mother in her 20s, when she complained that the crocodile had swallowed her phone. But then the phone started ringing, and the sound was coming from the crocodile's stomach. And all of a sudden, the aquarium worker said, you know what? She's telling us the truth. No idea how they're going to get that phone back. You know, Ancient Aliens, television series that so many people are on. I'm on this, too. A TV series that premiered on April 20th, 2010 on the History Channel talks about the incredible possibilities of visitations to this planet. And one of the trailblazers for these incredible stories, Ancient Aliens, Giorgio Tsoukalos. He joins us next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. 2 hours tonight with Giorgio Tsoukalos. He's been described as the real-life Indiana Jones and trailblazer that is changing the way the world thinks about ancient astronauts and those theories. Publisher of Legendary Times, Giorgio, of course, prominently shown on the History Channel's Ancient Aliens, and here he is on Coast to Coast. Hey, Giorgio, how are you?
Very well, George. How about you? I'm glad to be back on.
Likewise. Okay, first of all, what is it with the hair? Because I get more comments about you on Ancient Aliens and your hairdo than anybody I've ever heard about. What's going on there?
You know, my hair actually has its own Facebook fan page as well. So my hair has a complete life on its own all of a sudden. It's a phenomenon, and the truth, I tell you, is in the hair.
Now, for those of you who have not seen Ancient Aliens, and there's not a lot of you, because I got to tell you, Giorgio, I get a lot of response to that program just in the little snippets I've been on.
I'm really glad.
Giorgio's there, and his hair is way up there, and you can't miss him when he's on. And I've got to tell you, though, it's the information, though, Giorgio, that is absolutely stunning. Tell me about the series. How did it develop? How did it come about?
Well, 2 years ago, now 3 years ago, everyone remembers this latest Indiana Jones movie came out, Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. And it was basically an ancient astronaut movie. So the production company, they were making a two-hour documentary about the possibilities and the feasibility of Indiana Jones and the real-life concepts behind his quests and his ideas. And, because it was an ancient astronaut movie, in the very last segment, they had a segment about ancient aliens or ancient astronauts and their relation to crystal skulls. And then about a month later, I received a call from the same production company by a gentleman by the name of Kevin Burns, and he asks me, he says, you know, in the 70s, there was this book out called Chariots of the Gods. Have I heard of it? Do I know who this guy Eric von Daniken is? And I said, not only do I know who he is, but he's my boss. We publish a magazine together. He's like, oh, that's fantastic. And so he approached me with the idea of essentially creating a two-hour documentary of what has happened in the 40 years since Chariots of the Gods came out in 1970. And he essentially wanted to write a love letter to Chariots of the Gods, and it was all very exciting. And the network, the History Channel, loved it, and they said, you know what, if you have more info about this, we would love to, you know, get you more episodes, and let's roll with this. And yeah, I mean, that the rest, as they say, is history.
Well, it has been so successful for the History Channel. They have decided to keep doing it, haven't they?
Well, here's the exciting announcement. Then I'm really, see, I don't believe in coincidence. The fact that I've been called in to do the show tonight, you know, only a few days ago, I was given the knowledge, or the permission to tell the public that season three of Ancient Aliens has been approved.
That's great.
So I don't know. That's, I don't know exactly the details yet, but season three is definitely a go. And I mean, that, you know, that's pretty amazing, because even if you don't care about the subject matter, it will still raise questions that you've never heard about or never cared for before. And you know, there are many, many people that I've met, and they say, you know, either, you know, I've been thinking about these things for a very long time, I'm glad that I'm not alone in my thoughts, or you find people that say, you know, I've always been a skeptic, but you guys are really compelling in your argumentation. And as you know, George, when you hear stuff like that, what more do you want? I mean, it's really, it's a wonderful, wonderful phenomenon, and I'm really glad that you're a part of it, too.
Well, and I've got to tell you, we live and die in this business, Giorgio, as you know, by the ratings, and the mere fact that this is coming back now for part three, season three, tells you that it's making an impact on the public, doesn't it?
Right, it is, and you know, the interesting thing is also that people are asking me, so what are we going to talk about in season three? And to be honest with you, and you know, and you and I have been in this business for a very long time, and we've read up on the subject matter. There are so many unanswered mysteries still out there that we have not yet approached in Ancient Aliens. And at the same time, you'd be surprised how many people want to hear more about Pumapunku, or want to learn more about the Palenque Slab, or, you know, the sort of the mainstays of the ancient astronaut theory. And if you look at these things from different perspectives, there's always something new to be said about these things, because the one great thing about the ancient astronaut theory is that it's not a stagnant type of research, but in fact, each year that passes, new pieces of the puzzle are added, and the picture, the overall picture, becomes clearer and clearer.
What is your take? What do you believe the ancient astronaut theory is?
Well, essentially, the ancient astronaut theory tries to prove whether or not extraterrestrials visited Earth in the remote past. And there are multiple pieces of evidence for this, because in the ancient texts we have references to the gods. And mainstream archaeology always says that, yes, most of these ancient monuments were built in order to worship the gods, to have some type of a ritual temple for the gods. And then, you know, they tap each other on the shoulder, they go home, case closed, that's it, mystery solved. And I really don't think that it's that easy, because while we do have all of these references of those gods in the remote past, my question is, well, who were these gods?
Mm-hmm.
Because if these gods were really just a figment of our ancestors' imagination, then I don't think that they would have toiled with all of their sweat and blood in creating these massive, massive megalithic structures all around the world, you know, for something or someone that's essentially an invisible idea or an invisible person that does not necessarily exist, but only exists as an imagination. So that to me is not compelling enough. And so we propose that the gods described in ancient times weren't necessarily gods, but they were, in the way we think of God or gods today,
right,
they were in fact misunderstood flesh and blood extraterrestrials.
Well, if you were a human on this planet years ago, thousands of years ago, and you saw beings coming down from above in craft with light. You'd think there were gods too, I guess, wouldn't you?
And it would be incredibly frightening, because one thing has to be, has to be mentioned at the outset of every discussion regarding ancient aliens. Look, as you know, our ancestors were not stupid. They were not dumb. In fact, they were as intelligent as we are today, because regarding our brain size and brain structure, nothing really changed in the last 15,000 years. However, their technological frame of reference was way more primitive than what we have as a technological frame of reference today. So therein lies the difference. And anyone can go and Google the term cargo cult, and right there, that is the perfect explanation and the most logical conclusion that extraterrestrial visitation might have happened in the past, because if cargo cult behavior can take place today, which it does, then we're asking the simple question, well, if it can happen today, why not 10,000 years ago? And I am bold enough to say that that is exactly what happened here on Earth 10, 15, if not 20,000 years ago.
Giorgio, the clip leading into you was an excerpt from Ancient Aliens and their series on the angels.
Sounded good, huh?
Yeah, it's possible that a lot of people, I believe in angels, but it's also possible a lot of people have confused angels with ETs.
Of course. And see, here's another thing, and I'm really glad that you chose that clip and that you're opening, this discussion, because a lot of people ask me, so, Giorgio, what does that mean? Are you an atheist? Do you not believe in God? Do you not believe in angels? And the answer is a resounding no. Of course I believe in God. Of course I believe in angels. However, I think that we're all talking about two different things here, because, yes, the supernatural realm, in my opinion, absolutely exists. There's no question, because personally, I've had experiences that I don't necessarily want to go into today, but I am sure that the ghostly realm and the supernatural realm exists. But at the same time, you see, when you look at the ancient texts where angels are described, where they are fallible, where angels have to use vehicles in order to go from point A to point B, and things like this, then those particular descriptions of quote-unquote angels, in my opinion, are not the angels like guardian angels that we might have and things like this, but that those are different descriptions of different angels, meaning that those were misinterpreted flesh and blood extraterrestrials. And I'm not knocking, like I said, the idea of God or the idea of this all-encompassing force in the universe that we're all a part of. And so, you know, it's just the whole thing, as you know, I mean, it makes your head explode.
It really does. And I tell you, another segment that you did was on Vermanas and, you know, ancient craft that were flying all over the planet. That fascinates me, too. I mean, my gosh, Giorgio, they had to be real.
Well, no, and then that is the one thing that I always say. Not only were they real, but at the same time, whenever I speak to my Indian colleagues and my Indian friends, and I have lots of friends in India, when I talk to them about this, they kind of, to be honest with you, they get bored and they just smile at me and they're like, yeah, okay, what else is new? Because to them, that stuff that we talk about in Ancient Aliens, especially regarding the Vimanas and things like this, that to them is not mythology. It's accepted history that took place with flesh and blood, physical beings. And, you know, if those beings were physical, well, then there's only one conclusion, and that is they were extraterrestrials.
There's no other conclusion, Giorgio. None at all. LegendaryTimes.com is Giorgio's website. And that is, of course, the newsletter and the magazine that they put out. When we come back in just a moment, we'll continue this discussion as we go around the planet looking for ancient aliens. Next hour, we'll open up the phone lines and give you an opportunity to talk with Giorgio Tsoukalos as well. Well, next hour, we'll take your phone calls with Giorgio Tsoukalos as we talk about ancient aliens. When we come back, though, we're going to find out more about the legends of dragon snakes and get his take on 2012 and some other stories on Coast to Coast AM. Giorgio, tell us about the legends of the dragon snakes.
Well, that is, to me, one of my most favorite topics, because all around the world, it doesn't matter what current culture, but also especially what ancient culture you talk about, they all have these very bizarre traditions and stories of these dragon snakes. Because usually you hear about flying snakes, usually you hear about, you know, just dragons alone, but at the same time, in Asia, in South America, we have these stories of dragon snakes. And whenever these stories come about, and by the way, those stories are also found in mythologies in Native American myths. Like, for example, we have the Serpent Mound mystery in Ohio and things like this, where a flying snake, a fire-spewing dragon snake, descended from the sky and taught mankind in various disciplines, and then, woof, they just disappeared again. And so my question is, well, what is described here? Because did these dragons or these snakes, flying snakes, did they really exist as physical entities that they were, you know, stuff that we see in fantasy movies mm-hmm. today and things like that they were actual biological entities? And my personal opinion on that is absolutely not, because, you know, so far, not a single fossil of a dragon snake or a dragon serpent or a dragon, for that matter, has ever been found. There is no such thing. So to suggest that these quote-unquote mythological beings did exist physically, to me, is a bit bizarre to make that suggestion. So my question is, well, then what in that case was it that our ancestors saw?
What were they? Exactly.
Exactly. And according to the ancient alien opinion, they might have been some type of flying vehicles that looked to our ancestors like dragons, like some monstrosity flying, but they didn't understand the nuts and bolts aspects behind those technologies. Because in many cases, we can even read that the gods or the teachers from the sky actually walked out of the belly of those flying serpents. Now, who does that? Serpents, you know, snakes are way too small for anyone to walk out of. So our ancestors had to use their vocabulary with which they were able to describe something. And, you know, that's always what we have to think about. What is it that our ancestors tried to describe? Because they didn't have the same vocabulary that we have today.
And in some cases, Giorgio, they tried to depict whatever these things were on walls, caves, tablets. I keep thinking of that incredible piece of work at Abydos in Egypt. I mean, those look like helicopters. They look like submarines. They look like craft, don't they?
No, and that is absolutely right. It's downright incredible, because right next to those very intriguing carvings, at the same time, like, for example, in Guatemala, there are stories of these giant flying turtles that at one point in the Mayan past flew around in the sky, and they were used by the gods to travel from point A to point B. And we actually have carvings of these flying turtles. Now, both you and I know that turtles don't fly. They never did. And our ancestors, you know, again, they were not, you know, primitive intellectually speaking, but whatever they saw up in the sky did remind them of flying turtles. And so there is one example Yaja Lake in Guatemala, where multiple artifacts have been found that can be seen today at museums, where you have one artifact that depicts, or that was created as a replica, a small replica, of course, of one of those flying turtles. And then right next to that, and it looks very UFO-like, the person is wearing a helmet, and the pilot, or the head is wearing a, you know, some sort of pilot's goggles as they're worn today. And the body is very aerodynamically fashioned, and there's absolutely no pattern of a shell anywhere found on that body of that turtle. However, right next to it, another artifact was found from the same period, from the same culture, and it's a perfect rendition of a turtle. So with the legs, with the normal head, the turtle head, with the shell design and things like this. So right there, that, in my opinion, is concise proof that our ancestors were more than capable of discerning between one thing and another, because they knew exactly what a turtle looked like, and then they also made replicas or created something, manufactured something that was a bit different from a turtle, but it's still in the same realm, but there's definitely a difference. And right there, we know that our ancestors, they knew what they were doing. And they were, I think they made all these carvings, all these replicas of these figurines, so that they would know, look, if we do this, at least we've done our job. Whether or not our future generations will recognize what happened during our time, that's their problem. We experienced it, and here is what we did in order for you to never forget.
Tell us about the Bridge of Bempul.
The Bridge of Bempul is a very fascinating topic, and it's this monolithic site in India. It's this 400, a massive 400-ton megalith that has been placed over a ravine, over a gorge in India, over a river gorge. And archaeologists claim that this monolith has been brought in as far away as 400 kilometers, which is about 320 miles. And it was just put there so that people could traverse this gorge. And, you know, this is all very fascinating, because not only is it a massive monolith, but at the same time, the stories behind it are even more intriguing, because not only is that whole area where it's right next to a pilgrimage location, India. So it's a very sacred area where a long time ago the gods were intermingling personally with the local folk. And according to local legends, one day, in order to facilitate the pilgrimage journey for the people, this block of stone, this gigantic monolith, was placed there with the help of the gods. And they did this only by mental powers. But the thing is that, when I hear about mental powers, I'm not too sure about that, even though I'm not, dementing it or anything like this. I'm just saying that there might have been some misunderstood technology behind that moment when people saw this big monolith float across the sky and then, place itself on top of that, to make that bridge. I mean, and it's massive. It's and the incredible thing is that the reason why people have found out that this thing is really artificial is because the block of stone is not native to that region. So there.
How did it get there, right?
Exactly. And it's really the whole thing that fascinates me about the whole, stone workings and how the ancients cut stone. Look, I'm always told, especially by critics, ancient alien theorists, they're saying that our ancestors were stupid and they didn't know how to do anything, and it undermines human ingenuity and things like that. And all I can say is rubbish, because, look, of course our ancestors knew how to cut stone and how to construct stuff. I'm not even, debating that. However, when you find feats that we today have difficulties with our modern day technology, then my question is, how the heck was it happen? How the heck did it work back then, when we have always these descriptions that go alongside with these myths or these monuments that somewhere along the line our ancestors had help? And, you know, there we go.
Giorgio, you are going to be part of the Conscious Life Expo in February in Los Angeles. I'm hosting a panel there on 2012. What's your take on that year?
Well, I mean, you know, to pretty much just take away the whole anticipation. I mean, you know, ladies and gentlemen, nothing will happen. Absolutely nothing. The biggest problem or that I foresee is that our massive hangovers that we'll have the following day. But it's, you know, 2012 to me is Y2K 2.0, to be honest with you, because, you know, this whole doom and gloom scenario that's going on right now is very disconcerting to me, because one big aspect of this of the discussion is currently left out, and it's disgusting in my opinion, because, you know, everyone is pining for this date that's approaching very fast, and ooh, you know, it's all horrible and the world will end and the apocalypse. You know, but the thing that nobody talks about is that right now, right this very minute, it's not 2011. Some have suggested, and this is not me talking, these are scholars, academics that, you know, do this stuff for a living, where they, you know, study calendars and things like this. And some of these scholars have suggested that we might be off by as much as 75 years.
John Hoag, one of our guests, said last night we're off by 13 years. So who knows, yeah, right?
Exactly. And so, you know, I mean, look, there's absolutely no question that the Mayan calendar, if you know, all of our time and chronologies would, you know, be, if they would sync up, that on the 12th of December, on 21st of December 2012, the Mayan calendar will end. Absolutely, there's no question about that. However, that's just not next year. And according to the Chilam Balam books, what's very interesting, which is the book of the Jaguar Priests of the Maya, what's also very interesting is that, you know, everyone only talks about 2012, but nobody asks, well, if the calendar ends in 2012, well, do we actually know when it began? And the answer is yes. It began in 3114 BC on the 11th of August, actually. And you know, we would all have to agree that the Maya did not exist at the time. And so when you ask, well, what was so significant for them to begin the calendar at that particular date, according to the book of the Chilam, of the Jaguar Priest, the Chilam Balam book, it says in there that that was one of the times when the 9 and 13 gods, lowercase g, of course, descended from the sky. Basically, when the road to the stars descended to Earth, and when they gave us, or when they brought us culture and knowledge and things like this.
See, I think it could be some kind of celestial solar event. And I keep saying that. Is that possible?
Absolutely. I mean, there is definitely something to be said about that. I mean, just a few months ago, some archaeologists at a Mayan site, they in fact discovered or deciphered some Mayan glyphs where the Mayans talked about the fact that a long time ago the earth was completely covered in water.
Yeah.
I mean, that is amazing that we're stumbling upon all these discoveries or these translations today where we think we know it all, yet, you know, our ancestors, they also know a lot of stuff. And it just gives me goosebumps. It really does.
It is amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Tell me about some of the discoveries at the Darwin Museum in Moscow.
Well, that was very interesting. One of our Legendary Times researchers, she was there only a few months ago. And the Darwin Museum in Moscow is one of the largest museums in the world regarding evolution. And what they're known for is that they have many sections, many displays, where they have recreations of what some of our ancestors might have looked like. And they have, you know, scientists and sculptors working on these projects, you know, looking at fossils and then, you know, working it essentially in a forward manner by putting muscle tissue onto the fossil and then, you know, adding skin and things like this until you essentially then finally have, I mean, it's forensics pretty much what we do today every day. And so, interestingly enough, there in one display, they found a rendering of one of our human ancestors. And, you know, anyone can go to legendarytimes.com and check out. We have a picture on there. And that bust, that skull, looks extremely like some type of an alien. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really fascinating because, you know, as you know, George, one of the basic tenets of the ancient astronaut theory is that we are all alien hybrids. We're part human and part extraterrestrial because a long time ago, extraterrestrials tampered with our DNA. And that's when we, you know, quote-unquote, became intelligent or quote-unquote became human.
The work of the late Zechariah Sitchin.
Yes, and may he rest in peace. I mean, what a horrible, horrible news that was, huh? Yeah.
Well, he was 90 years old.
Yeah, you know, he had a good life.
Yeah.
But still, I remember I
always thought he was genetically altered myself. I mean, he kept going on and on. We gave him an award at the Conscious Life last year, and he was just a riot.
I know, and that's you're speaking on my mind because I had the great privilege of you know, hanging out with him, and we actually, you know, went to a couple of places, so I drove him around in my car, and it was really cool to spend some real private time with him. And he was sharp as a tack, still at, you know,
oh my
at
gosh.
Age, and very vibrant.
Yeah, I asked him on the air, Giorgio. I said, "So Zechariah, how old are you?" Knowing he was 90 years old, of course, but I wanted him to say it. And I said, "So how old are you?" And he went, "That's very rude." he didn't want to tell anybody how old he was. And then he was planning to come on the show to talk about his latest work, and that because he's been calling for DNA of a bones of a queen.
Yeah.
And he died. He got sick, and then he passed away. So we were never able to get him on again.
I know, but I know from some personal sources that that project has definitely not died. So
good.
You know, in fact, the publishers of his book, Inner Traditions, they are carrying the torch forward, especially, you know, regarding that that testing of that DNA. So, you know, it's still in the works. So hopefully something you know, this yields something. I mean, because we are living in very exciting times right now. That's
absolutely
all I can say.
We're with Giorgio Tsoukalos, LegendaryTimes.com. He puts that together, and also very prominent in the History Channel's Ancient Aliens series, where he's just announced it will have a part three, year three run shortly, as a matter of fact. So they got to put that together. So that's good news. Giorgio, of all the things you have investigated and studied, what one question would you like answered for yourself? What would that be?
Do we really have to limit it to one?
Yeah, you just get one.
Well, one.
Existence of God, what would it be?
No, because for that, you know, I don't even think that aliens would know the answer to that question. See, I think there are certain questions that are ubiquitous throughout the entire universe where not even, you know, advanced aliens, and by advanced, I don't mean spiritually, or I don't mean morally advanced aliens, but technologically advanced aliens, because I really think that, you know, good and evil permeates the entire universe. You know, there's a balance, the yin and yang, and things like this. So I am really of the strong belief that not even aliens have the answers to life's questions, like how did it all begin?
They're still searching, aren't they?
Yes, yes.
Maybe that's why they go throughout the universe.
To search, because, George, that's what our society will do 500 years from now. I'm not saying this is going to happen tomorrow, but we are a species of explorers. We have this, you know, this curiosity.
It's in us, Georgia. It's in us. So stay with us. We're going to come back and take phone calls with you. We'll also find out about what's going on in Peru and Malta when we come back on Coast to Coast AM.